This is Jim Spencer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Barbara Honegger, is a senior military affairs journalist and former White House policy analyst, special assistant to the president in the first Reagan administration. She's put together quite a bit of information about 9/11 and the anthrax attacks. Barbara, please do continue.
Okay, thank you, Jim. And I'm very glad, actually. We discussed before I went on the air whether we should do 1 or 2 hours, and I'm glad we decided to do the 2 hours.
Indeed.
We're starting the second hour, and that's great. Just before the break with the news, I had kind of moved forward in my paper, The Scarlet A, A for Anthrax, and because you had raised it yourself. The fact that this administration has so brazenly assaulted the Constitution.
Yeah.
And I pointed out that the timing, the date of the still secret and still withheld from Congress, despite over 2 years of Senator Leahy and Representative John Conyers and many other members of the Congress demanding it, the White House still refuses to show Congress what they claim is an October 23rd, 2001, so-called first, and I put that in quotes, authorization signed by Bush for what we now know as his warrantless wiretap program, which, of course, then was completely illegal because it willfully and brazenly violated the FISA Act. And what's important for people to understand is that because of a footnote in an entirely different document that is public, it was inadvertently leaked out to the press and to the public not too long ago that this October 23rd, 2001 still secret document that Bush used to justify his illegal wiretap program against U.S. citizens in this country states in its text that the Constitution's Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable searches and seizures do not apply to, quote, U.S. military operations inside the United States, close quote. Now, what in God's name, as Joe Biden and other members of Congress in hearing said, what in God's name was that sentence for?
Yeah.
All right? Now, the fact
read it again, Barbara. That's so damned interesting.
It's extremely important. What we know from a footnote in a different document, we know that the October 23rd, 2001 so-called first authorization signed by Bush authorizing secretly and illegally, I should add, the warrantless domestic wiretap program, that October 23rd, 2001 document stated in its text, quote, the Constitution's Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable searches and seizures do not apply to U.S. military operations inside the United States, close quote. Now, that is a phenomenal fact. Now, why wouldn't the White House be willing to this day, as I'm speaking with you, give that so-called official authorization for the warrantless domestic wiretap program to Congress? The reason they're not giving it to Congress, Jim, is because of the timing. It's about the anthrax attacks. They use their own inside job, false flag, anthrax attacks they themselves did using weapons of mass destruction against innocent American civilians on our own soil to justify a warrantless wiretap program against all innocent American civilians, all 250, 300 million of us in this country. That's what they did. It's the link to the anthrax attacks that they do not want public, and that's why they are still to this day withholding that document from Congress.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, also, let me point out, the fact that the Bush administration continued its secret domestic warrantless wiretap program per the October 23rd, 2001 authorization signed by Bush, still secret, long after it became publicly known in the mainstream press and television that the anthrax attacks were the work of their own U.S. military lab. That very fact shows that it is strong evidence that the attacks were perpetrated, the anthrax attacks were perpetrated by the same individuals who then used them to justify the illegal warrantless wiretaps program. And we know who that is. That's the White House. exposing the links between the inside job anthrax attacks and the false pretext the White House used for its still-secret domestic warrantless wiretap program is thus critical to bringing this administration to full legal accountability for its attacks, not just on 5 innocent American civilians who got anthrax letters and died from them, plus Senators Leahy and Daschle, who were, by the way, and this is very important, Senators Leahy and Daschle were the two senators who more than any others at that very time in October, in September and October of 2001, right after 9/11, they were the ones who were saying, hold on, Bush-Cheney White House, we don't want you to railroad through this Patriot Act. And they're the ones and their staffs who got the super weaponized Project Jefferson anthrax through the mail. This is the equivalent of the Reichstag fire. This was an attack on Congress by weapons of mass destruction known as the anthrax letters. And that caused these senators, unfortunately, to give way. And therefore, the Patriot Act was passed in the middle of the night. And this is the absolute equivalent to Hitler's Enabling Act that Hitler and the Nazis passed in the wake of the Reichstag fire.
Yeah.
We have already pointed out that this attack on these two senators who were trying to stop the Patriot Act was the equivalent of the Reichstag fire through these anthrax letters.
Yes.
Okay. Now, what I want to do is I want to go back. When I jumped ahead to point out the importance of the anthrax attack letters and their link to the justification for the administration's secret domestic warrantless wiretap program, I now want to jump back in my paper to where we were originally, and that was I'm now going to just give you the highlights of why the Tripod 2 biochem terrorism WMD attack exercise scenario that we've already seen the evidence that it was to begin on the morning of 9/11 itself as well as the next day, September 12th, why that probably involved anthrax or an anthrax stimulant. Now, what do I mean by an anthrax stimulant? Well, when you're going to do an emergency response exercise on at least in part an anthrax terrorist attack scenario, you're not going to use actual anthrax unless you're an actual terrorist. You're going to use something that acts as if it were anthrax, that is dispersed through the air similarly, similar kind of size and weight of powder, like powdered anthrax. And that's called a stimulant, S-I-M-U-L-A-N-T. So what is the evidence that anthrax attack was actually part of the Tripod 2 scenario on 9/11 and the day after? Well, we have some really strong evidence. First, on September 11th itself, somebody, Jim, that you and I both know, a very fine activist in the 9/11 truth movement, Jeanette McKinley, happened to live, as fate would have it, in an apartment on the fourth floor of an apartment building literally across the street from what was soon to become the Pit at the World Trade Center. Now, Jeanette McKinley's neighbor and close friend, whose first name is Bruno, B-R-U-N-O, told Jeanette, and I have this directly from Jeanette at a recent Santa Cruz 9/11 conference, Jim, that on the morning of 9/11, or at the very latest, the next morning, Bruno, her neighbor and friend, told her that on the morning of 9/11, he was personally pulled into the bank lobby, to a bank lobby off the street next to the World Trade Center towers by an FBI agent with
Hold that thought, Barbara. We'll return to the scene of the action. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Stand by.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
All right.
Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Barbara Honegger, is a senior military affairs journalist and former White House policy analyst and special assistant to the president in the first Reagan administration, and she's on to quite a lot related to 9/11 and the anthrax attacks. Barbara.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Before the break, and we sure have lots of breaks, I'm glad that they're funding your program, Jim. This is great. Before the break, I was just giving the first example, or the first really strong piece of evidence that the Tripod 2 biochem terrorism emergency response exercise of Giuliani and Jerry Hauer on the morning of 9/11 and the next day, September 12th in New York City, was almost certainly on an anthrax attack scenario, at least in part. And I was starting to tell you about the fact that Jeanette McKinley, her neighbor in her apartment, was just right overlooking, from the fourth floor, overlooking the World Trade Center towers, what became the pit at the World Trade Center. Her friend, Bruno, who was her neighbor and close friend, on the morning of 9/11, and he told her this, that day, or at the latest, the next morning, September 12th. Bruno, on the morning of 9/11, was yanked into a bank lobby through the glass doors, and they closed the glass doors, right across the street from the World Trade Center towers that morning as that big dust cloud came down the street in order to save himself. And the man who pulled him into the lobby turns out to be an FBI agent. He had a big FBI across his jacket. And while they were in the lobby, Bruno told Jeanette McKinley right afterwards, quote, that the FBI agent told him in the lobby, quote, "We were told this was going to happen and that would involve anthrax," close quote.
And this is in New York.
This is in New York.
In relation to Building 7.
Right next to the World Trade Center towers.
Correct. This is bizarre.
Yes, it is, but,
As bizarre as this. You're not going to believe this, Barbara. Today, a flash news right now, the Denver campaign office of John McCain has received letters containing a threat and an amount of white powder. Just happens to be a story that's going to muffle the fact that he doesn't know how many houses he owns, Barbara. Isn't that a remarkable coincidence on the same day it should happen?
Oh, well, that's very interesting, and you know why? Because Mr. McCain was the very first neocon puppet out of the box right after the anthrax attacks. He went on ABC News, the nightly television, on ABC News on October 18th, 2001, to push the known disinformation that a non-existent additive was in the anthrax letters called bentonite, and he claimed that was evidence that Saddam Hussein was behind it because only the Iraqis put bentonite in their anthrax.
How in hell would he have known something like that? My God.
He didn't know if he was being the puppet and the spokesperson and the mouthpiece for the neocons and the PNAC neocons who were behind the attacks themselves.
Yes.
That's the bottom line. That's who John McCain really is. Okay. So, we've just learned that on the morning of 9/11, one of our top 9/11 activists worldwide, Jeanette McKinley, that her close friend Bruno was told by an FBI agent right next to the World Trade Center's, quote, "We were told this was going to happen." That is, as the dust cloud was coming down the street, as at least one of the towers were collapsing at that moment, and that it would involve anthrax. Now, you say that's unbelievable, Jim, but when you read my whole paper, it's not unbelievable at all. In fact, it's quite believable. It's not only believable, it follows logically.
Yeah, but that's when you understand the story. I just say it's so bizarre on its face.
Yes, it sounds bizarre on its face, but then there were anthrax letters right after 9/11, weren't there? That's bizarre on its face, too, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, all right. So, it's clear that the FBI itself, and this was an FBI agent who told Jeanette's friend Bruno that they knew 9/11 was going to happen, the attacks would happen, that it would involve anthrax. The FBI itself clearly was pre-alerted because guess what, Jim? Their offices were in World Trade Center 7. The FBI, as
right.
well as the DOD and the SEC and the CIA and
right.
all kinds of alphabet soup federal offices, as well as Giuliani's Office of Emergency Management, I had to get out of that tower, and they all did. They excavated that building or evacuated that building before it came down by controlled demolition later that day and wasn't hit by a plane at all.
Oh, Barbara, okay. Did you know today, too, we just got the official report from the NIST that said that the building came down because of office fires that caused the joints to overheat and collapse. It's the most ridiculous report yet about anything to do with 9/11.
That's unbelievable. That happened the same day that John McCain allegedly gets an anthrax stimulant letter. Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness. Well, they're
I mean, they know how to mix and match, Barbara.
They're running scared, Jim, to be putting these things out together. They really are. Okay, now I want to move on to other evidence that links the actual tripod to biochem terrorism attack exercise scenario of 9/11 and September 12th to anthrax. Number two, believe it or not, in the minds of the scriptwriters for the tripod to emergency response exercise in New York City, believe it or not, an attack on the World Trade Center was already associated in their minds with biological and chemical terrorism. According to the New York Times science writer William Broad in his book Germs, the plan for the 93 attack on World Trade Center 1, believe it or not, involved a plot to push cyanide out into New York City.
Bizarre.
So the people who, this is in the book Germs, G-E-R-M-S, now he wrote that book with Judith Miller, whose credibility has been a bit compromised, but nevertheless, William Broad is a highly respected scientific journalist. And he is the lead science journalist for the New York Times, and he was a co-author on that book. So, you know, I'm pretty sure that's probably true, and I know that the FBI knows that that's true. Okay, so what we need to do now is we need to look at, besides Jerry Hauer, who are some of the other major suspects for who is really behind, not Ivan and not Stephen Hatfield, probably, although I still have my doubts about Hatfield, by the way. I think that that $5 million was probably hush money and that he was involved, and I'll tell you why in a moment. But I don't think that Ivan's was directly involved with the attacks. He is just a convenient, crazy dead man that they have tried to pin this Seoul anthrax letter killer attack pin on. So, who else is likely to be a key suspect in the actual anthrax attack?
A good question, and we'll return to it right after this break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with my special guest, Barbara Honegger. Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Barbara Honegger, is a senior military affairs journalist and former White House policy analyst and special assistant to President Reagan in the first administration. Barbara, please do continue.
Okay, Jim. Before the break, what we were doing was I was going to move into the other key suspect in the anthrax attacks. Before I do that, I need to set a little bit of the context. And that context is this. According to mainstream press reports, many of them, on Bruce Ivan's alleged involvement in the anthrax attacks, one of the most interesting facts that is revealed in all of these documents the FBI gave out on August 6th is the anthrax in the mailed letters, but not in the anthrax that appeared on Bob Stevens' computer keyboard in Florida, and he was the first person who was targeted by the weaponized anthrax, that Florida anthrax did not trace back to Ivan's flask in his lab at Fort Detrick. They claimed that the anthrax in the letters did, but not the first attack anthrax in Florida that went to Bob Stevens. And that's very important. Why is that important? The Stevens Florida anthrax is critical to proving that Ivins, if he was involved at all, didn't act alone, as the Florida anthrax doesn't trace back to his lab at all. And because it's the first known anthrax attack of the series, it's therefore the closest in time to 9/11 and therefore the most likely to be directly linked to 9/11. Now, contrary to the claims of the FBI, I know from personal interviews with people who worked at American Media, which is where Bob Stevens worked in Florida, and in fact the wife of a man whose desk was right next to his at American Media. Stevens was a photojournalist there for The Sun, which is one of these newspaper rags in supermarkets. Contrary to the FBI's claims, anthrax was found not just around his computer, but throughout the entire building in Florida, in Boca Raton, Florida. Now, why does this matter? Well, the building was therefore condemned. And the FBI, who remember from earlier in the program, the FBI told Jeanette McKinley's friend Bruno on the morning of 9/11 in New York City himself, that we, the FBI, were told this was coming and it would involve anthrax on 9/11. It turns out that the FBI told the American media publisher that they would have to clean up their building, that it wouldn't be cleaned up at taxpayer expense. And that would be a huge expense to them. So they decided to sell the building instead. And Jim, guess who, according to the New York Times, bought that building? The first anthrax attack crime scene with its evidence still in place. Who do you think bought that building?
Well, let me guess. Silverstein Properties?
Mayor Rudy Giuliani. Mayor Rudolph Giuliani.
Very close.
Well, that was really close, Jim. I think you get some brownie points for that answer. According to the New York Times, just former Mayor Rudolph Giuliani bought that American media crime scene of the first anthrax attacks on Bob Stevens, the first person to die from it. He died on October 5th, 2001. He bought it up at an anthrax sale price because it had been condemned by the government.
Well, guess who's going to be the keynote speaker at the Republican convention?
Yeah, Giuliani and Mr. Lieberman. Mr. Lieberman and Giuliani just announced today. Well, I'm hoping that this information, I intend to get this information about Rudolph Giuliani to as many papers in Colorado and the Twin Cities as I can in the very near future.
Yeah.
So what do we have here? We have Rudolph Giuliani buys this anthrax, first anthrax attack crime scene, and to obviously control the evidence, Jim. It was his director of his own Office of Emergency Management, Jerry Hauer, who we saw earlier in the program, is one of the two top suspects for being part of the inside job conspirators on the World Trade Center attacks on 9/11 and the anthrax attacks.
Well, you got to tell us more about William Patrick, who, after all, owns five classified patents on weaponized anthrax, including the one that produced this 1 trillion spores per gram contained in the anthrax letters.
Yes, very good. So, moving on. So, if the Florida anthrax that Bob Stevens got doesn't link back to Ivan's flask at Fort Detrick, which we've learned from the FBI's documents released earlier this month in a special press conference, then Stephen Hatfield didn't do it, and Ivan's didn't have anything to do with the first anthrax attack in Florida, then who was behind the anthrax attacks? Well, we know that there, and I agree totally with Barry Kissin, who was your magnificent guest on the anthrax attacks here on your program last Wednesday, that Battelle Memorial Institute is almost certainly the source of the highly weaponized anthrax that was in the letters. That's Battelle, Memorial Institute, also known as BMI. And that's in West Jefferson, Texas. And what's important, really important about Battelle, is that it was at Battelle where Project Jefferson, now at the beginning of this program, as you recall, I mentioned to you that on the day before 9/11, Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld himself announced that Battelle's Project Jefferson had succeeded in creating secret, highly weaponized anthrax. Well, guess who worked at Battelle? A man by the name of William Patrick. Actually, William C. is, the middle initial C is in Charles. I don't know what his middle name is, but it's William C. Patrick, the former top scientist at Fort Detrick, a close colleague and former Giuliani, friend of Giuliani's OEM director, Jerry Haller, and William Patrick was the mentor of the of Stephen Hatfill, who was just paid $5 million by the FBI. This William Patrick, who worked with Battelle, personally holds 5 classified patents and trade secrets on the weaponization of anthrax, and this is the critical thing, including a patent that whose process results in the production of weaponized AIMS strain anthrax at 1 trillion spores per gram. Now, this is precisely the number of spores, 1 trillion per gram, that the original scientific laboratory analyses after 9/11, for the entire first year after the anthrax attacks and 9/11, all of the information in the public press was that the anthrax in the letters to Senators Leahy and Daschle was highly weaponized and at the concentration of 1 trillion spores per gram. Now, that is precisely the process that William Patrick, who worked with Battelle, he has the personal patent and trade secret on that weaponization process that produces 1 trillion spores of anthrax per gram. Now, after leaving Fort Detrick, William Patrick was contracted by Battelle, you're going to love this, to research and write a special report, and Barry Kissin mentioned this as well last Wednesday on your show, a special report on how the postal mail in this country could be used as the vector for targeting hyper-weaponized milled spores of anthrax produced by Project Jefferson.
No kidding.
And following the anthrax attacks, only the footnote in that report that stated, quote, "We have now arrived at the point where we can purify anthrax to the extent of 1 trillion spores in a gram," close quote, was censored and removed. Now, you wouldn't remove it unless it pointed to one of the key suspects and conspirators of the anthrax attack.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Barbara Honegger. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Barbara Honegger, senior military affairs journalist and former White House policy analyst and special assistant to the president in the first Reagan administration, has been filling us in on connections between the anthrax attacks and 9/11. Barbara, I regret this is our last segment, so I invite you to cover all the bases that need to be covered.
Okay, there are just a couple of things I would like to cover, and then, shoot any question you have at the end. I'd like people to know where they can actually read my paper. I'd like you to read it, because it's 5 single-spaced pages of condensed, documented information. There are many links for you to go and see for yourself what I'm saying is true and documented. It's called The Scarlet A for anthrax. The Scarlet A, links between the anthrax attacks and 9/11. This article will be published in the November issue of the Washington, D.C. independent newspaper, the Rock Creek Free Press. I was just told by the editor. And it's also on the web at Kevin Barrett's congressional campaign website, and I am told that it will soon be up at the Spine. That's S-P-I-N-E with dots after it. It's an acronym. The Spine, S-P-I-N-E website. That's a 9/11 expose website. And hopefully many other places as well.
Well, let me mention one, Barbara, because I'd like to get, contributions from you and from Barry for the new book I'm editing entitled The 9/11 Controversies. I think it would be perfect.
Great. I will definitely flesh it out, and you will have it for your book, Jim. That's
super.
Great.
Absolutely super.
Now, I'd just like to close by alerting people to the fact that if you were following your newspapers, there's a lot of attention being paid over in Georgia and South Ossetia right now in a kind of a wag the dog situation. If you were paying attention to your mainstream papers like the New York Times and the Washington Post this Monday, you know that early this week the FBI held what it called a science briefing on the evidence that it alleged pointed in the direction of Bruce Ivins being the alleged lone anthrax letter killer. And the problem with that is that they are claiming now, suddenly, this Monday, that the anthrax in the letters that were mailed even to Senators Leahy and Daschle, completely reversing 180 degrees, all of the scientific test results that came out in the mainstream press in the year after the attacks. Now they're saying that they weren't weaponized at all.
Really?
Why are they saying this, Jim? They're saying this because people like Barry Kiston and myself are educating the public that if they allege or admit that the anthrax in the letters was weaponized, they're admitting that there was a WMD attack, an inside job, WMD attack against innocent American civilians.
I think the toothpaste is already out of the tube.
The toothpaste is totally out of the tube. And by the way, they're just simply lying. I mean, when you actually read Monday, August 18th, front page of the New York Times, FBI details anthrax case, but doubts remain. It's by William Broad, this science writer for the New York Times, by the way. Do go to the New York Times site if you don't have this article already and read this letter, this article. I mean, it's laughable. They're now claiming that the silica, which they admit, is normally a kind of an additive that is part of a weaponization process. They're admitting there was silica in the letter anthrax, but they're saying it got there, quote, naturally, unquote, but they're not really sure how it got there. And they're admitting that there was some electrostatic in the anthrax, which is part of a weaponization process. But they're actually claiming laughably that these electrostatics were because of the mail processing machine that the letters were run through.
Barbara, these guys are such BS artists. It's unreal. Absolutely unreal. Every time they get caught with their pants down, they have some excuse why you're not actually seeing what you should believe. It's
yes, and
unreal.
They change their story. Whenever somebody's onto them and has actually nailed them to the wall that they have committed a WMD attack, an inside job attack against innocent American civilians, both in the 9/11 attacks and the directly linked anthrax letter attack, they just change their story. They're liars, they're cheats, they're criminals, and they need to be brought to justice.
It's truly disgusting, Barbara. I think you're doing a great job, you and Barry both. I'm really pleased that you're doing this. Perhaps you could use the last couple of minutes to tell the audience what you think, what we can learn about our own government here. I mean, it's just stunning that this is, I think you're absolutely right, and that it's shocking that it hasn't been driven home that if this guy Ivins wasn't responsible, that's proof that it was an inside job. So if what the government were saying were true, it would prove it was an inside job. And, of course, if what they're saying is false, that's further evidence it was an inside job, since the anthrax itself can only come from a highly militarized source that appears to have originated in Fort Detrick, but Barry, I think, suggested there was another place for its refinement.
Dugway Proving Ground, but the main point there is that Battelle, which is where William Patrick is associated, who has the patent for the weaponization to 1 trillion spores per gram, Battelle runs both Dugway Proving Ground and all of the anthrax experimentation there.
Now, why should we not think that this was produced in a cave in Afghanistan?
On the one hand, we know that it wasn't because it was 1 trillion grams per 1 trillion spores per gram.
The whole thing is so absurd. The whole government's account, Barbara, is so completely ridiculous. It's hard to believe that they can, you know, lie in our faces and think we're going to accept it.
Right. Well, I think I'll close by just encouraging people to realize that people in the so-called alternative history and truth movements, they like to claim that there's a secret government. What we're talking about is our government, with a capital G. They do lots of things in secret, but this is not a secret or parallel government. This is simply the U.S. government we are talking about.
Yeah.
It is our government. This is what they do. The Pearl Harbor attacks were not a surprise. We now know that from now declassified documents from the National Archives. 9/11 was not a surprise attack. 9/11 was an inside job. The anthrax attacks were an inside job. Our government attacks its own civilians for geopolitical purposes.
Yeah, absolutely unbelievable. Unbelievable.
But I think their time is coming to an end because people like Barry Kissin, yourself, and myself, we're not going to let them get by with it, Jim. We're simply not going to let them succeed.
Well, using that phrase, coming to an end, leads me to make an observation to our audience, which is that Genesis Communications Network is planning to replace this program with another that they have lined up in about 6 weeks. So Kevin and my time as the dynamic duo appears to be on a short leash here. We're going to continue to do all we can to bring to you the important developments in relation to 9/11 and other issues related to domestic politics and occasionally foreign affairs. And I must say, it seems to me the electronic voting machine integrity is a crucial one that could be done overnight to go back to paper ballots. The polls that we're hearing today are completely absurd in relation to the actual events on the ground. John McCain is becoming increasingly conspicuous as if not a complete idiot, certainly a liar, a bold-faced liar who's not very good at it. It's really shocking that this guy should even be a candidate for office, Barbara.
Yes, I agree with you. In fact, the way I like to think about it is, remember the biblical story of Cain and Abel. Well, this time we've got McCain and we've got Abel. Everybody knows that Barack Obama is a magnificently able candidate for president.
He is. I think he's our single best hope for the future, and God forbid nothing should happen to him. Barbara, I can't thank you enough. You're doing great work. You and Barry are terrific. I want to get you both in this book, okay? Thank you.
Got it.
Real pleasure. Everyone out there, thank you all for listening. Jim Fetzer, your host on The Dynamic Duo.